So let's move on now and talk about gastric cancer, which was discussed in the symposium by Charlie Fuchs and Yelena Janjigian. And one of the issues we were getting into there was sequencing of agents in metastatic disease, particularly second and third line therapy. And now that we have checkpoint inhibitors as an option, we asked people in general what their second line therapy was in HER2 negative gastric cancer after first line FOLFOX. Most people are saying ramucirumab paclitaxel, but about a quarter of the audience would test for a PD-L1 and consider pembrolizumab. How do you sort through that decision, Axel?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and you rightfully said, you know, second, third line therapy is a wide open field, and I don't think we have this one standard of care. I think first line is pretty much locked into fluoroprim plus platinum, and then there's kind of the wild west. You have randomized data for paclitaxel ramucirumab, which is probably the most established standard of care. And then checkpoint inhibitors come somewhere in there, and the nivolumab and pembrolizumab, the way they're being developed is a little bit different. Nivolumab tries to develop PD-L1 levels agnostic. They don't care about PD-L1, whereas for pembrolizumab studies, they check their reactive score, their PD-L1 score in immune cells and tumor cells, and only select those patients who are PD-L1 positive. Now, one interesting point was the KEYNOTE-61 study, which compared pembrolizumab to paclitaxel in second-line therapy. I mean, a lot of the studies we've seen in GI malignancies, whether it's HCC, whether it's gastric cancer or colorectal cancer, data that we've seen have been based on single-arm pembrolizumab, nivolumab, plus minus ipilimumab studies, but we didn't have a lot of randomized comparison. There's ATTRACTION-2, which compared nivolumab to best supportive care, so no active control arm. Now, KEYNOTE-61 was the first study in a GI malignant tumor, which read out and compared pembrolizumab in PD-L1 positive tumors to paclitaxel, which is might not even be the standard of care, because as the audience said, paclitaxel plus ramucirumab was standard of care. And the study was negative. Negative for its primary endpoint, particular overall survival. But when you looked at the curve, there was an interesting crossing of the curves. There was a subgroup of patients that might have had long-term benefit from pembrolizumab over paclitaxel. And that's the intriguing part. By all hazard ratio and p-value definition, pembrolizumab did not beat paclitaxel, but there was a subgroup of patients that had long-term benefit. And I think our challenge right now is to identify these patients who have this long-term benefit.
It always strikes me as kind of weird when I see these big phase 3 trials comparing checkpoint inhibitors to chemotherapy. You see it in lung cancer and a bunch of other diseases. And I guess that's just an outgrowth of, you know, how drugs get approved and looked at. But it seems like maybe what you want to look at more is what the chance is of somebody being, you know, free of progression in 18 months or 2 years.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think what we need to change is our readout for regulatory approval. If I see, for instance, a drug that can keep patients free of progression for, let's say, 2 years, in about 20-25%, which is the tail of the curve, that is an active agent. We don't see that with chemotherapy. And I believe in looking at the tail of the curve and trying to develop strategies to raise the tail, which could even translate into cure. You know, I mean, if we have a tumor that doesn't progress after 2 to 3 years, that might be good. Something interesting that came up that Scott and I, you know, in our symposium with you talked about is we have both used pembrolizumab in a neoadjuvant fashion and had resected tissue after treatment, which still looked viable on scans, but was actually fibrosis. So sometimes what we see on the kind of residual cancer manifestation on long-term treated patients, you know, on scans, might actually not be cancer anymore, might be just fibrotic tissue.
So there was a question from the audience. Do patients do worse who get antibiotics and checkpoint inhibitors? And i.e., is there a correlation between the gut microflora and the response to checkpoint inhibitors?
So I don't know that, but there were very intriguing data actually coming from, including Charlie Fuchs' group, where they looked at something very cool, that bacteria that colonize the cancer, the primary tumor, can also be found in the metastasis from these cancers, Fusobacterium nucleatum. So, and there were preclinical data and kind of animal data where they actually looked at antibiotic treatment of animals that had the PDXs, the transplanted tumors, that harbored these bacteria. And these bacteria and the cancer responded to antibiotic therapy. So it could actually be a question of which antibiotic do we use for which bacterium. And I can envision that in the future, we might not just check the tumor genome, but also the bacterial genome that is embedded in the cancer.
That's fascinating.